All right, so it looks like you all can hear me, and I would say let's begin this webinar. We have a lot to cover, and I'm excited to tell you about all the opportunities we have in the East Asia Pacific region. My name is Michelle Belorchi, and I'm an Outreach and Recruitment Specialist at the Institute of International Education. I'm located in our Washington, D.C. office, and if any of you are local, you know that we've been inundated with some snow this morning and afternoon. So our office is actually closed. So I am bringing this webinar to you live from my home. So I'm happy that we could continue to share the information that we have today about the launch of the new competition for the 2020 and 2021 academic year. To give you a little background about the Fulbright program, it's been around for a while. It was established in 1946 by the junior senator of Arkansas, J. William Fulbright, named after him. And the purpose of the program is to bring people together from across cultures through education, so through teaching and research. We also have a student program available. The program I'm speaking about today, the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program, is geared specifically for U.S. citizens who are interested in teaching and researching abroad, so for faculty, professionals, and independent researchers. If you are a student or pursuing interested in pursuing a degree through Fulbright, I would like to guide you to the Fulbright student webpage where you can find more information about that. The Fulbright program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State's Educational and Cultural Affairs Bureau. We call them ECA for short, and it's administered by IIE. We've been administering the program since its inception, and so in addition to the binational commissions and U.S. embassies abroad, these are kind of the three main entities that are involved in the Fulbright Scholar Program. And if you do get a Fulbright grant, you are certainly in good company. Just want to go over some of the statistics for you. We've had over 380,000 grantees participate since 1946. That includes U.S. scholars and U.S. students, as well as visiting and foreign students who participate in the program. So it is a bilateral initiative. Annually, we send about 800 grantees abroad from the U.S. Scholar Program, and there are about 160 participating countries overall. Now, if you receive a Fulbright, as I mentioned, you are certainly in good company. We've had heads of government and state participate, Nobel Prize winners. We recently had two Pulitzer Prize winners last year, so bringing the number up to 84, MacArthur Fellows, and Presidential Medal of Freedom recipients. So if you're out to get any of these awards listed, a Fulbright is probably a good one to start on that pathway. We've got here included the diversity and inclusion statement. This is from the Department of State, and we just want to let all applicants know that we do try and ensure a diversity of the American people participating in this program. This is a program funded in part by the U.S. government, and so we would like to see a range of applicants in terms of geographic diversity, diversity in background, all that kind of, you know, just to let everyone know that this is a program for the U.S. people, and so we do want to have as many applications representing a diversity of backgrounds, national origins, religions, etc. Okay, so in terms of the U.S. Scholar Program, I'm going to primarily be covering the opportunities to teach and research, but we also do have what's called the International Education Administrator Seminars, and they are available in a few countries. There's two countries that fall in this region, in the EAP region, but you can see the vast majority of the awards from last year, 93% were the traditional kind of teaching and research awards. In terms of eligibility, the baseline eligibility is U.S. citizenship, and then depending on the award description and the requirements in the award, the degree and teaching experience, those might vary from grant to grant. About half of the, a little over half of the awards in the catalog do require a PhD or terminal degree, but many are open to those that hold a master's degree with several years of experience or professionals that have several years of experience.
We are also, the program is open to artists, journalists, lawyers, musicians, etc. So all of those people are also encouraged to apply. Even though it does say U.S. Scholar Program, it is open to those fields as well. Again, teaching experience may vary per award. Typically, they require at least 3 or 5 years of teaching experience beyond the PhD. We also do encourage applicants who have served in the U.S. Armed Forces, as well as we do have updated policies on applicants who are interested in reapplying to the program. We've removed the lifetime caps, so there isn't a number of Fulbrights you can receive, but we do ask that you wait 2 years from the time that you receive the grant to the time that you reapply to the program. And we do also require strong justification as to why you would require another Fulbright grant. Okay, so as I mentioned, the U.S. Scholar Program offers opportunities to teach, research, or do a combination of both at the minimum of 2 to about 12 months. We even have postdocs that are 2 years, so there's lots of great opportunities. This particular program is available in about 137 countries, and we do have several awards that are open to all disciplines, so I will be going over those. The key important thing to approach, to keep in mind when you approach this program is that you apply to a specific award with a specific project in mind. So you're allowed to apply for one project, one award per competition. So we've just launched the 2020-2021 application cycle, so that was a couple weeks ago, and we close on September 16th. And you'll notice here in the little graphic I have that it's kind of divided not in any particular, with any particular trend or preference. So I don't want anyone to think that there's a preference just for research or just for teaching and research versus teaching. There are several awards that really only allow research or that only allow teaching. So depending on what the preference of the award is, that's kind of what is indicated. That's what you would be doing. In the event that the award is open to all three, so research, teaching, or a combination of both, then it's up to the applicant to determine what is required for their program. Okay, so now going over to the award opportunities in the region. So we do have 50 awards in 17 different countries, totaling about 150 unique grants, grant opportunities. They are open to a range of scholars, whether postdocs all the way to distinguished chair awards for more senior scholars. And we do have a wonderful regional webpage that I'd like to point out, and you'll see the graphic here. So when you go on to our main page, and if we have time, I'll be walking you through the website and the awards catalog. You can see that. So there's definitely a lot to see in this exciting region that is, kind of known for economic growth and a lot of cultural and political powerhouse. Okay, I just wanted to cover some highlights before I go into more specific offerings. In Australia, we've got the award to the University of Technology in Sydney, and this is a 3 to 4 month research grant. Most of the awards you'll notice, if they're just one semester in length in Australia, do begin in January or February, so the spring, what we would call the spring semester for us, because they do host an orientation and a gala event in Australia. There are three key areas of research that this university is focusing on, specifically in data science, sustainability, and health. So data science, including things like social robotics, computational intelligence, and brain-computing interface, as well as forensic intelligence and interpretation of forensic evidence. So it's an exciting award. In Sydney, a wonderful, bustling city in Australia. So if you do have the experience and expertise for this award, I encourage you to go into the awards catalog and look that up. We also have an exciting award to Hong Kong in Hong Kong and China Studies. And so that's a unique award that you can be placed in Hong Kong and kind of travel back and forth and research. Japan offers a journalism award. That's something new this year. It's for junior and senior journalists. To learn more about Japan and to come up with either a series of articles or a TV or radio program, something tangible should come out of this research project. And again, junior and senior journalists anywhere along their career path are welcome to apply. Korea has a Peace Studies Award. They had this award in the past. It's an exciting opportunity to teach at the Graduate Institute of Peace Studies in Kyunghee University for 4 to 10 months. Again, Korea finds itself in a very unique position, so Peace Studies is a very appropriate discipline for this teaching grant, and it would be an exciting way to interact with Korean students in the classroom. And moving on to the Philippines, we do have a research grant for research on U.S. and Philippines relations. And researchers, when they're there, although you might be affiliated with one particular host institution, you will be encouraged and invited to give lectures or workshops across institutions across the country. A letter of invitation and a letter of, you know, a language proficiency report are not required. All research or all of the lectures will be done in English, and you're not required to have any local language knowledge. Now, the big thing that we've got here are the All Disciplines Awards. So across the 17 countries, most of them do offer at least one All Disciplines Award. I've hyperlinked all of them here, so when you look at our archived webinar, you can download this PowerPoint and you can click on all of these links. So just want to point that out. And I've also indicated whether the award is open to research or teaching or any combination thereof. You'll notice that Japan offers two separate awards depending on what the grant activity is. So the research grant in this case is more specific to STEM awards, while the teaching and research grant is really truly open to all disciplines. So again, the preference for research in Japan focused more on STEM and environmental studies and things like that. I wanted to point out the All Disciplines to Macau. This is a unique opportunity to be placed in Macau teaching or teaching and researching. A lot of people don't realize they can actually go to Macau on a Fulbright grant, so that's something that I wanted to highlight, as well as the teaching or research or combination offered in Mongolia. So again, going to places like Macau, to Mongolia, Vietnam, Cambodia, you really have the opportunity to make a huge impact because a lot of Fulbrighters haven't gone there before. It's a smaller program, so the opportunity for impact and being the first Fulbrighter at any designated institution is unique. So I wanted to point that out. And again, we have different all disciplines available to New Zealand, Philippines as well, Singapore, an exciting place to be in researching in the region, Taiwan, Thailand, and Vietnam as well. So if your research doesn't fit into any of the other awards in the region, for example, if you look in Australia and you're not able to see any other place for you to be affiliated with, then an All Disciplines Award is really the best way to go. Oftentimes, you'll see in our catalog partner hosted awards. So you'll notice in Australia, most of them are hosted. But the All Disciplines Award allows you to select your own host, determine your host location, etc. So that's another benefit to applying to an All Disciplines Award. Okay, what's also unique about this region is the range of opportunities, as I mentioned, for scholars at any point in their career. So there are 4 unique postdoc awards, 2 of them in Australia, and then China and Taiwan. So the Fulbright postdoc scholarship opportunity in all disciplines to the university in Deakin in Melbourne that is open to all disciplines, whereas the postdoc to the University of Newcastle is strictly STEM applicants. So that's more of multiple disciplines. So that's something to keep in mind. Those are both partner awards. They're hosted by the university there, so they do indicate some preference for disciplines or specializations. So be sure to check that award description for more information. Now, the great thing about hosted opportunities when there's a partner award listed in the award title is that they will provide typically 99.9% of the time there will be a contact person or contact email listed in the award description because they will require a letter of invitation. And so the best way to approach that is to contact the university, send them your CV and your kind of an abstract of your project that you're proposing, and then they would have an idea as to whether they would be interested in hosting you and providing that letter of invitation. Keep in mind, providing you with a letter of invitation does not indicate that they've selected you. It's non-binding, but it's a good indication that they're interested in what you hope to do. If they don't provide one for you, that indicates then that you might not be the best fit for that award. So that's in the case with the hosted awards. With China Studies, I would take a look and see in the award description if there's any particular host institutions listed. And the same would go for Taiwan. Now, the award to Taiwan is strictly geared towards applicants in the field of arts, education, humanities, some professional fields, and social sciences. So be sure to check that your discipline and your specialization kind of matches what they're looking for, because you'll be a stronger fit if there is a match. Now going on to, and just before I move on, the last point I wanted to make about the postdoc awards is in terms of eligibility. So when we refer to postdoc awards, we're referring to people who are eligible to apply are those that have completed their PhD within the last 5 years prior to applying for the Fulbright. So if you're currently enrolled in a postdoc in a PhD program, as long as you complete your degree by February 1st, so if you're applying this year in September, as long as you have your degree in hand by February 1st of next year, unless it's otherwise stated, you'd be eligible to apply. Now, I do know that Australia, I believe, makes an exception that as long as you've got the PhD conferred by the time the grant starts, you're also eligible. So again, taking a look, making sure that you fit the eligibility depending on what the particular award is looking for. Okay, so now moving on to the other spectrum, the other end of the spectrum, the Distinguished Chair Awards. So the Distinguished Chair Awards are the most prestigious awards within the program. They are open to senior academics at the level of associate or full professor by the grant start date, and with a distinguished career in the proposed field. So typically, applicants have a very strong publication record, strong record of teaching. And so that is really, if you fit that description, you might want to consider applying for a Distinguished Chair Award rather than a kind of a regular award open to any level of career. If you are not at the level of associate or full professor at the time of application but will be by the grant start date, please let us know in your project statement, because in many cases you'd still be eligible to apply. Okay, so Australia comes in with 6 unique Distinguished Chair Awards, and I've outlined them here. The first one is the Advanced Defense Science and Technology Award at the Defense, associated with the Defense Science and Technology Group. So the DST Group is a partner kind of institution that includes several kind of a consortium of several different entities in Australia. So there could be several different host institutions that you could affiliate with under the umbrella of DST. So taking a look and seeing where you'd be a good fit, and there is some contact information and additional links on the award description. Then we have the Applied Public Policy at Flinders University in conjunction with Carnegie Mellon, Australia. And that's a unique opportunity for those of you that have a public policy background for research in Australia. And then the award to ANU in Canberra in Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences. So a wonderful opportunity to be placed in the capital of Australia at one of the at ANU, which is a remarkable research and teaching institution. Then we move on to the Entrepreneurship and Innovation Award. This is at RMIT University, which is a global university, and the campus that you'd be affiliated with is in Melbourne. So this is a unique opportunity for applicants with a strong background in entrepreneurship and innovation, because that's really what RMIT is focusing on. There is another award to the University of Newcastle. So in a way, as we saw earlier, they have the postdoc award in multiple disciplines. And similarly, they have the distinguished chair in multiple disciplines. So again, taking into consideration that most of the disciplines they're looking for are STEM focused. And then last but not least, the Science, Technology, and Innovation Award. Abbreviated as CSIRO, that stands for the Commonwealth Science and Industrial Research Organization. They have multiple locations throughout Australia, and the purpose of this grant is to undertake research in your area of expertise that contributes to CSIRO's priorities. Okay. And then we've got moving on to China, we do have the Distinguished Chair Award in Social Sciences. This is a 10-month grant, so they really are looking for someone to make an impact for that academic year to teach or conduct research as well as teach. So there's more information on the possible locations. And then lastly, Korea has the distinguished lectureship at Yonsei University. And this is open to all disciplines. It is a teaching grant, and they do expect you to teach 2 undergrad or graduate classes per semester. So it's a wonderful opportunity to have an experience in the classroom elsewhere and to interact with Korean students in your field. Okay, and then the last slide in terms of the award opportunities that I wanted to highlight were the multi-country opportunities that we have in the EAP region, East Asia Pacific region. The first one is the ASEAN Research Program, and this is a unique opportunity, and I'm really proud that we do have this opportunity available to conduct collaborative research in key priority areas for ASEAN, so in any of the ASEAN member countries. So if you're not familiar what ASEAN is, it's similar to the concept of the European Union, but for Southeast Asian nations. And the member countries I've listed here, these are the countries where you can carry out this research. You can select 2 to 3 countries in ASEAN to conduct research. There's up to 5 grants available for 3 to 6 months. So this is a wonderful opportunity. If you have a research project that involves at least 2 of these countries listed, this would be a great opportunity for you to go to the region and really kind of get a flavor of what it's like to be on the ground dealing with these political issues, political, economic, and cultural issues. And then the other opportunity is the Cross-Strait Studies Program. So there's up to 2 grants for 5 to 10 months. And again, this is also a research grant available to conduct research on issues related to mainland China and Taiwan. They do ask for contemporary topics specifically, and you must indicate in the project statement why you need to reside in both Taiwan and China. You're also able to visit Hong Kong to conduct research as well. And so again, if you have a project that involves China and Taiwan and being on the ground in both of these places, I encourage you to view the opportunity through the Cross-Strait Studies Program. Now what I'd like to do is before we go into the website and the catalog of awards, I'd like to see if any of you have questions at the moment We will have time at the end, but let's see. All right, so let us go to the catalog. And can you all see the catalog that I'm showing now? If you can just raise your hand, I want to make sure this is working on my end. So you should be looking at the catalog. Let's see. Okay, so I'm going to be walking you through now where you can navigate these opportunities. The first thing I should point out is the main website. And so you'll go to CIES.org, and you'll notice here about halfway through we've got these four different tabs here, these tiles. And so I've clicked on the catalog of awards, and I've got that open here. And I'm going to search East Asia Pacific and search all. And you'll see here all of the awards are listed alphabetically by country. And so if we just click on, we can open one here, the All Disciplines to Burma, and we can see the award details, kind of the overview on the right side. There's five grants available. We can see what the grant activity, what is available to do in that country. So in this case, Burma offers teaching or teaching and research. It's open to all level of scholars except early career. A PhD or terminal degree is required. We see the deadline, my contact information, and a little bit about the grant activity. We see the grant length, some information about start dates and location, and preferred disciplines. Scrolling back up, if we click on the requirements, we see that a letter of invitation should not be sought. So you'll only see this for a few awards in the catalog, and this is because the U.S. Embassy that manages this program will place you or determine where you would be a best fit. So you should not contact any institutions in Burma because based on your background, they need to kind of identify the priorities and the needs. Some information about the language and professional profile. They give some useful links here. And then the award benefits, so the stipend that you can anticipate, as well as any kind of travel or relocation, book allowance, research allowance, etc. If there's any special award benefits, some countries do give. I know China has some, for some of their awards to China, there are some very generous dependents benefits. So if you bring your family, your children are going to school there, they would be able to get some stipend for school. And then the country overview. So this is kind of how you would navigate the awards catalog. You can also filter options according to discipline or activity. Let's say you're only interested in research. The grant length can only be 3 to 5 months, etc. Oops. And you can then narrow your search down. So we had 50, and now we've narrowed it down to 30. So this is one way to kind of explore the catalog. As I mentioned, you can only apply for one award per competition, so it's important to make sure that you are the best match. If we look at another award, this is the Journalism Award to Japan, we see that there's more information here, some links, and we see some more details about the flex option. So I didn't get to cover the flex option. The flex option allows you to conduct research during multiple visits across two academic years. And so in this case, we see that the flex option is available for this award. So let's say you are interested in a six-month grant, but you're only able to get away for 3 months at a time, so you can do two visits of 3 months each. Another thing I'd like to point out to you is the Fulbright Scholar Directory. This is a wonderful resource if you are interested in going to a country that you don't have any contacts at. You could see what scholars have done and where they've been placed. So let's say you're in biology and you'd like to see people who have gone to, let's say, Japan. Okay. So it's working. Okay, and we see these grantees were in the field of biology, and these were the host institutions. So if we click on one, we can see what exactly this person was doing, where they were hosted, and you could think about either contacting the university directly or perhaps contacting this grantee, asking her, okay, how was your experience? Do you have any contacts you can share with me? I don't have any contact in Japan, and I'd like to affiliate with Kyoto University. So the Fulbright Scholar Directory is a great resource I encourage you to view. You can also search for any grantees at your institution and see how, if you have questions about how they manage their grant, if they didn't have sabbatical, or how did they, you know, how did they have those conversations with their department chair or dean, that's one way of searching who among your colleagues has received a Fulbright. Keep in mind, this only goes back to 2010, 2011, so it isn't the complete listing, but certainly it is a useful resource. Okay, so getting back to our PowerPoint. Okay. All right, so moving on to kind of the nitty-gritties of how you would go about selecting the right award and putting together a competitive application. So as I mentioned, the key is really to select the right award, since you can only apply for one per year. So things to consider are your experience, your expertise, and how it matches up to what's listed in the award description. Are there any preferred disciplines mentioned? Is there any language ability requirement? Is there any language requirement? Consider your regional expertise and where it would make sense for you to go, or your experience in a particular country. And then also consider the project's relevance to that particular country and the host institution. Why that country? Is there a need to be residing in that country to carry out that research, or are you just working with data sets that can be done here back in the U.S.? So we really need to see that, you know, you've gone through and really matched yourself up to the right award. If there's an award opportunity that is an all-discipline, if you have a country that has an all-disciplines award as well as a specialized award, and the specialized award is more of a match to you, that would be the way to go. If it's a country that only offers an all-disciplines award, then be sure to see if they have any preferred disciplines or specializations. If your specialization or discipline is not expressly listed on that grant, on the description, then I encourage you to view the scholar directory to see if the country selected anybody outside of those kind of listed disciplines. If you see that if they only prefer STEM applicants, then you might want to, and if you're an artist or a musician or have a social sciences background, you may want to consider a different country. So that's really kind of going through the awards catalog, taking time to research all the viable opportunities. And then also taking a look at the particular career profile they're looking for. Distinguished Chair Awards, obviously, as I mentioned, Associate and Full-Rank Professors. Is it a postdoc award that would be a better fit for you, or should you go for that All Disciplines Award? So kind of keeping all of that in mind. So the flex option, as I hit on earlier, the flex option is something that's available. It's not available to all awards or regions, but certainly if your project requires it and you clearly provide the timeline in your project statement as to what you'll be doing on this visit and on that visit, the flex option might be the way for you to go. Typically, it is only available for research grants because teaching grants do require you be there for the duration of the semester. Okay, and I've already kind of gone over the different awards for career profiles. We hit on the multi-country awards available in the region. The other kind of global award, it's called the Global Scholar Award. So for projects that require visits to more than one country in more than one world region. So let's say you were doing a project in Japan and Mexico, that would then fall under the Global Scholar Award. So there's more information in the awards catalog on that. Another thing I do want to mention is that a home university affiliation is not required to be eligible to apply. So you, if you don't have a current affiliation with a U.S. institution, that's absolutely fine. It's not required. We do welcome, you know, applications from independent scholars, emeriti faculty, professionals. So if you don't have a home institution, that's fine. I wanted to point out some of the application resources. We have a very detailed website with lots of different links to information that will help you as you put together an application, some information on project statements. We have guidance on procuring a letter of invitation. We hold webinars throughout the competition, so if you're in a particular discipline and you see that there's a webinar that covers STEM or law or business and economics, be sure to attend that as well. We also have the Fulbright Scholar blog, so if you're wondering what it's like to bring your family on a Fulbright grant, we've got some great stories of grantees who have brought young children or spouses or dependents with them and kind of sharing what it's like. It is a very family-friendly program, so we do encourage you to bring your family if you're able to. And then also we encourage you to connect with us on My Fulbright if you haven't done so already. This is the way to register your interest and also stay on our mailing list to get information on new awards or upcoming webinars, application guidelines, etc. So, okay, so now moving on, I wanted to go over the application components kind of what you're going to be asked for when you start the online application. It isn't anything you haven't seen before, so just wanting to let you know that even if you have applied in the past, we do have a brand new application system. So even if you have applied in the past and you weren't selected, you will have to start a brand new application. So aside from the online application form, the project statement, which is 3 to 5 pages in length, the CV, again, has page limits as well, 3 letters of reference, and then depending on what the award requires, you may need to submit course outlines or syllabi if you're going to be teaching. You'll need a bibliography, kind of a literature review if you're researching, and then again, depending on the requirement, a language proficiency report, a letter of invitation, and then supplemental materials based on if you're one of these disciplines listed here, so arts, architecture, writing, and journalism. Now, in terms of the project statement, this is really kind of one of the key pieces in the application. You only have up to 5 pages to tell us kind of really everything. First and foremost, why Fulbright? Why are you interested in this program? Keeping in mind that part of the program's mission is, you know, at the core of our mission is promoting mutual understanding and bringing Americans, you know, having cross-cultural experiences in countries all around the world. And so when you're on a Fulbright grant, you are kind of the face of the program and also kind of a cultural ambassador, kind of serving kind of as a, you know, diplomat of sorts while you're on your grant. And so it is important to address your interest in the program and, you know, your flexibility, adaptability, etc. And then specifically what you hope to do, where you hope to do it, why it's important, why at that particular host institution, and what is the relevance for that country, what is the relevance for your career trajectory, and then last but not least, the outcomes of the grant, the impact of the host institution and the host country, as well as for you and your home institution. So we'd like to see, you know, that there's kind of both sides benefiting to this project. In terms of affiliations and letters of invitation, as I mentioned, if the host institution is identified in the award description, you'll see usually a contact who would be able to provide the letter of invitation. If it's not identified, if the only guidance is any appropriate institution, that means it's up to you to identify where you feel you'd be a good fit. Now, I understand many of you might not have contacts in the countries that you're interested in, and that's absolutely fine. You can contact me. I can get in contact with the Fulbright Binational Commission abroad. Let's say you're interested in going to Indonesia, but you don't have any contacts. You don't know which institution would be a good fit for your background. I would contact them and then provide you with possible institutions. As I mentioned, the Scholar Directory is also a great resource. You can search who has gone there in the past and where they've been affiliated. Keep in mind, when you do have a letter of invitation from the host, that it is non-binding. Ideally, it should come from the person you hope to collaborate with, the person who will be in that department with you, who will be your point person. And of course, it should be on the institutional letterhead. We don't have any particular format or, identified template or anything on the web page. What should be covered in the letter of invitation is what you plan to do there while you're affiliated, how long you'll be affiliated, who you'll be closely working with, and then anything that the institution might provide, whether a workspace, archive access, lab access, library access, etc. And of course, having a very enthusiastic tone to the letter helps to convey the interest by the host when the review committee is reviewing the application. Okay, so let's see, went over that. Okay, in terms of the timeline, I wanted to point out we do have a September deadline this year, and right after that we have the U.S. peer review that takes place in October and November, and then grantees can expect to be notified by as early as January and as late as April, and then all the paperwork takes place from May to June, and some countries that do not have Fulbright commissions will have pre-departure orientations, sometimes in Washington, D.C. or other cities across the United States, where you'll be able to meet other grantees to your region and also get information about kind of what happens next. So it is kind of almost a year process. So if you're thinking about applying to the program but you're not quite ready yet for 2020 and 2021, or your sabbatical doesn't line up or what have you, think about it kind of a year to a year and a half in advance from when you are thinking of going on a grant. I wanted to touch briefly on the administrator seminars that we offer, because Japan and Korea do offer international education administrator seminars. So we will be hosting a separate webinar on that. I believe it will be taking place in April, so take a look on our webinar schedule to sign up for that. But these are two-week opportunities for administrators on campus to further ties with Japan and Korea. There's more information under IEEA seminars on our website. Okay, so we've got about 15 minutes for questions. I've just put up a couple questions here that are kind of FAQs. If you're interested in contacting me, my contact is on the award description and my direct phone line at the office. The deadline is September 16 this year. And can you apply for two or more awards? No, you can only apply for one. But again, we do have multi-country options. So if you do need to be in two places during one grant, that is an option available. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we often get the question, is there a preference for teaching or for research or a combination? And then what is required for teaching and research? So if it's not otherwise indicated in the award description, there is no preference if all three grant activities are available. If you're going in for teaching and research, and it doesn't mention the ratio, then that is up to the applicant. So I know some awards in other regions do list, there's one award to Nepal, for example, that's 80% teaching, 20% research, so that's where the focus is, whereas for other countries it might be 50-50, split down the middle. So important to take a look at any kind of details mentioned in the award description about that. So I'm opening it up now to questions. You can type them directly in the chat box, and I'd be happy to answer them as they come in. If you have questions that come up after this webinar, please email me at eastasiapacific@iie.org. And again, stay connected with us on social media, on my Fulbright, and of course, if you're interested in referring your colleagues to the program, we do appreciate that, and we'll reach out to them. So are there any questions? Let me see if we have any questions coming in. Okay, yes. Okay, so I think I just addressed that one. How are teaching loads or expectations determined for teaching or teaching research awards? So I've noticed several of the awards in a lot of these award descriptions do mention specifically two classes or one or two classes being kind of the teaching load if it's a teaching and research award. So having a look at the award description and then again touching base with the host institution and clarifying how often those courses meet, whether it's twice a week or once a week. So again, it varies from host to host and from award to award. Okay, so which types of awards are most suitable for independent artists who are not affiliated with the university? That's a good question. So you'll notice if you go into the award description, it'll say profile. And I can actually show that here. We can go back to the catalog. And I'm going to bring up the award description we had here. You'll notice under award requirements, professional profile might be listed. And it'll say either open to academics or, in this case, open to academics and appropriately qualified professionals outside of academia. So this would be what you would need to see if you're not an academic and if you're not based at a university. So that would be one way to search awards that way. So let's see, what else do we have? All right, is it good or bad to already have experience in the country? Well, that actually depends. Some awards do mention, and I've seen it, I believe, two or three times so far in this region, so take a look, but some awards do prefer grantees who have not had experience in that country previously. However, on the other side of that, if you have previous experience or at least have some contacts or collaborators and you visited a couple times, you know, maybe short term, that might actually be to your benefit because the commission or the embassy would feel that you would be able to kind of hit the ground running and you've already got kind of a network to fall into. So it really depends on what's listed in the award description. So there's not one particular answer for that. Okay. If we already have established research colleagues, can we continue those relationships or do we need to forge new ones? Yeah, so kind of picking up on what I just spoke about, that's absolutely fine. We do have a lot of people who apply. They say, look, I visited Taiwan for a couple weeks last year, and I'd really like to go for 6 months and do my research there. I've got a contact at the university there. So perfect. That's great. You don't necessarily need to find new ones unless, of course, your colleagues are at a university that is not one of the host institutions that's identified or mentioned or listed in the
in the award description. Again, if it's an all disciplines award or if it's an award that states all any appropriate location, then certainly that's fine. But if it's a hosted award at, let's say, Yonsei University in Korea, but your contact is elsewhere, you would need to find someone at the host. Okay, so let's see. We've got a couple more. Let's see. Can one apply to an award in two different countries? Yes, so I hit on that. So in this case, the question is about an award to Italy and Malaysia. So yes, that would fall under the Global Scholar Award, which allows you to select up to three countries across three distinct world regions. So Italy would fall under Europe and Eurasia, and Malaysia would be in this region, EAP. So yes, that is possible. Okay, we've got several questions coming in. I'm going to try and get to as many as I can. One question, I'm going on sabbatical in January 2021. What is the deadline? Okay, so if you're going in sabbatical, that would work. The spring of 2021 is what we're open to now, so the deadline is September 16. Okay. All right, let's see what else. We got a lot. Language proficiency. What portion of the awards require language fluency? That depends actually not just on the country, but within the country, if the country has several awards like Japan or Korea, there might be different language requirements per award. So if it's a teaching award, all teaching in the region is done in English, so you don't have to worry about having any prior language experience. If your research requires knowledge of the local language, you do need to address that in your project statement. If, however, you do not require language proficiency, let's say you're going to China and the project that you're doing does not require knowledge of Mandarin or Cantonese, because perhaps the team you're working on or what you'll be doing, the team you're working on might be, they all can speak English, or you'll be working primarily with English material, then we need to see that listed in the project statement. So again, check the award description for information specific to that particular award and whether you need to provide the external language proficiency report. The language proficiency report typically would come from someone who teaches the language at a university or college. Okay, let's see. How much time do we have? We've got about 5 minutes. Okay, in terms of courses to be taught abroad, should the courses be specific to the discipline of the applicant, or would English also be a suitable course to teach if the host site is in need of English instruction? No, typically the mode of instruction would be in English, but you need to teach in your area of expertise. Now, we do have some awards that are TEFL awards. There aren't any in this region, but we do have a TEFL award to Central Asia. There's a TEFL award to Estonia. So take a look at the awards catalog for TEFL award options. Some awards might prefer TEFL as a discipline, but I am not aware of any particular one that would request that unless it's otherwise stated in the preferred discipline list. Okay, let's see. Yes, I was observing that the award of interest requires that requests that applicants have another source of funding. So there's an award to Taiwan that is called the All Disciplines Award, but it does say partial maintenance. So there's only one of those types of awards in the region, and what that means is that you're able to combine this award, the Fulbright award to Taiwan, with, let's say, another grant that you've received. So it would be a supplemental grant. So the amount for Taiwan in that particular award is not enough to cover the grantee's stay. But typically, for the rest of the awards, the stipend, the monthly stipend that's offered, along with any of the other benefits such as travel or relocation, dependent tuition allowance, etc., those are typically enough so that you can maintain a decent lifestyle abroad. Okay.
Okay, we have a question about the postdocs to Australia. Best to contact them. They might not necessarily need a completely brand new research project. If your research project that you have in mind or the area of your interest aligns with one of their specializations, you could contact them and kind of see where you'd be a best fit and if you can develop something together or if they need you to develop something on your own. So that would be the way to approach that. Let's see. Okay, a couple more questions. Okay, do applications for master degree programs differ from traditional research? So if you're in a master's program, I would tell you to go to the Fulbright student program. I'm not an expert on that, but I know the student program offers funding for graduate students up until their dissertation. Okay. All right, I think we've got, okay, I have quite a lot of international experience. Is this good or bad? So, And this also kind of would hit on the person who served in the Peace Corps, if they're interested in applying to the same country. So again, it depends. I would take a look at the award description to see if there's any preference for grantees that are new to the country or to the region. If you have significant international experience, that may make you less competitive. Okay, and specifically in terms of eligibility, we do have an eligibility requirement that you may have not resided more than 5 years abroad in the 6 years preceding the application. And 1 year in our eyes counts as 9 months. So an academic year abroad is a full year. So pay attention to those kind of small eligibility requirements. If you're not eligible now, if you're at the 5 year limit, you might be eligible next year when it's down to 4. So taking into consideration the, you know, kind of foreign residence abroad. Okay, let's see. I think I've got room for one more question. Let's see. Got that one. And the last question would be, I think we've hit on everything. Oh, if a family member goes together, do I need to purchase a separate insurance? So those questions I'm not able to answer. I really don't have the details of what happens post kind of notification after you receive your grant. You would speak with our advising team, but I know that, you know, kind of if you are bringing dependents, I believe you and your dependents would be covered for the travel insurance. So I'm not sure about the other insurance. Is there any age cutoff? Okay, good question, and this will be the last question. There is no age cutoff, but if you are selected for a grant, you do need to submit the medical records, medical exam, and other kind of information before we send you off on your grant. So other than that, I want to thank you for joining us today on this webinar. I'm happy to answer any questions via email. You can see my contact information is right here, East Asia Pacific. This is my number at the office. And we will be hosting webinars about how to apply using our new application system, so the application walkthrough, and we will be taking questions there. So taking a look at our webinar schedule will be the next step, which is down here. And other than that, I wish you all a wonderful rest of the day and look forward to assisting you with your application. Thank you.